This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
When you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member, you'll know a thing or two about an expertly packed capsule wardrobe that balances business and leisure. So you can go from conference sleek to cocktail party chic with a few new accessories. You can hustle from 9 to 5 before exploring with ease from 5 to 9. Because you're the chief excursion officer. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know. Learn more at go.amex/business.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. Welcome to another episode of Comedy Gold Mines, where we do what? That's right, say it. You're on the other side, but I'm envisioning you say it, so fucking say it. We get inside the minds of amazing comedians, and oh my God, what amazing minds they are. And sometimes to get into these minds, well, you got to go in with a high level of respect, and that's what we're doing today. The comedian we have on the show, I've known for quite some time, and I just have respect, a high level of respect. He's not only been a successful touring headliner comedian, but he's done it and done it at a very high level for years. For years. And this man has an audience. He has a fan base that not only follows him, but they fucking come and they show up and they show out. Respect. You got to just go respect. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about none other than Jim Gaffigan. Holy shit. Welcome to Comedy Gold Mines. What's up, Jim?
How's it going, Kevin? I am so excited. It's always nice to talk to a comedian, right?
It is. That's why I did this. There's a high level of there's a high level of excitement that I honestly get when I get to talk to other comics. And I mean,
right? It's a good gig. It's another gig you have that I want. You have a lot of gigs that I want.
Give me two, Jim. What? Give me two gigs that I have that you want.
All right. Super Bowl, when you were on the field and you almost got to walk on stage. That was like, I'm like, is that Kevin? What's he doing there? I just feel like, Kevin, you're just not putting enough effort into your career. It's just like, you got to put more effort in.
I do.
Like Jordan Peterson, he looks at you and he's like, he is a monster. I wish I could do a Jordan Peterson impression. No, but you're killing it, and congratulations.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man. Jim, as are you. I meant the things that I said at the top, man. I've had such a high level of respect just for the way that you've done it, the way that you've handled your career, right? And the reason why I say what I say is because, you know, there's a significant amount of work that goes into truly building a fan base and understand how to navigate within that fan base correctly, right? And I feel like you have such a great relationship with your fans, right? It's one of those talent to fan connections that are so visible. It's so visible. Like, you know, I know I have fans. I know I have a brand. And I know I got a lot of shit going on, right? So I'm able to check into a lot of boxes. But I work that. I put a high level of energy into that to make sure that I'm giving my fans something. I try to recreate myself as much as possible. And whether it be stand-up, whether it be television, film, radio, podcast, whatever, I'm trying to check a lot of boxes. Jim, you're a fucking comics comic. You're always creating, you're writing new material. You're never in the same space, and you churn. You fucking churn. How many specials do you have now, Jim?
This last Netflix one was number 9.
Jesus Christ.
But, you know, it's like, as you know, it's one of those things where there's a reward in the process of doing it. Do mm-hmm. you know what I mean? It's all self-assignment. And there is, you know, as any comedian you know, you probably talked about this. It's like there's nothing more rewarding than that new joke, that new chunk.
At all.
It's the best, right?
At all.
It's like, I mean, and it is a, it's a different kind of endorphin rush that I love acting, but it's a, that's a different thing. You know, the stand-up thing is just, it's not easy. It's not quick, but it's kind of like it rewards diligence. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. What's your process, Jim? Right? Like I know I have a system. And you know, when the pandemic hit, of course it broke that system up, and that was the first time that I kind of put a special together fast, right? Like, when I did, Zero Fucks Given, that was like, I put that together during the pandemic over like the course of like, you know, 2.5 months. It was just a challenge of, let me see if I could construct an hour of material, you know, get it to a point to where there's a flow, there's a story behind it, or I got some good punchlines in it. Let me see. That's the first time that I didn't take about anywhere between 8 to 12 months to develop a set, work a set, tour a set, yeah, then do a special. So there's normally like a 2-year window in between, and there's a year of development, year of tour, then punctuation with special, start over. So there's like a 2-year cycle that I was kind of staying true to. What's your system?
It's ever evolving. It's gone through different times where it's you know, I mean, I have 5 kids, you know, my wife, I remember waking my wife up when she was breastfeeding. She had fallen asleep breastfeeding a child, and waking her up and saying, we got to come up with some more bacon jokes. So it's like, there's different, you know, and so it used to be much more of a writing session kind of thing. And when you talk about your process during the pandemic, by the way, during the pandemic, I didn't really write stand-up. I was doing these CBS Sunday commentaries, which are kind of really kind of easy. But you know, stand-up is, my process has now evolved to where I come up with a nub of an idea, maybe a joke or a punchline, and then I go on stage and I kind of riff on it, and then I rewrite from there. I'll go back and listen. But yeah, I mean, performing is probably the most important element now. But initially, it's usually something that bumps me, you know, that's weird. I mean, I always think it's so fun, and you are such a great storyteller, that like when you find stories that are yours, obviously, that you've done all these specials and you're like, wow, I didn't know I had this. Like, why didn't I talk about this earlier?
Yes.
Like, there is this fear of like, I'm going to run out of material. Like, I'm going to, you know, there's going to, you don't want to be repetitive, you know? And so there is something, and I think it kind of changed when my wife got this brain tumor and I really had to write about, apply what I had learned to a different topic. And so in doing,
like, I'm going through that now.
What's that?
I'm going through that now. Wow.
Yeah. So it's like you go through these serious things and these weapons that you have essentially are, you know, processing comedy when you can apply them to not things that happened 30 years ago or 10 years ago, but like things that are happening now, is really, you know, it's again, it's like as a comedian, it's this gift to be able to process things. And, but also it's, you know, the audience kind of knows where you're at. I mean, there's some comedians that can probably hide a little bit, but I think that the audiences appreciate an authenticity. And so the balance between, you know, you want to keep some mystery, but you also have, there has to be part of you that's an exhibitionist, which I think is ever evolving. And as long as we've done stand-up, we're still getting pieces of ourselves on stage. So it's weird. So, but I would say that it's ever evolving.
It's not weird. I mean, what you said makes so much sense, especially, I mean, the key notes that I took out of that is, of course, ever evolving, right? Ever evolving. And, you know, talking about the new challenges that you present yourself with, because you do find a space of comfort. And for me, that space of comfort, it was heavy family. It was heavy wife, my kids, right? And you were in that space as well, because it's, you know, what I think sometimes an audience may not be able to understand, or may, right, is we live a different life after the success comes, and the Rolling Stones and the late night owls and the men of the night that we once were, well, that slowly distances itself as you get older and more polished and more successful in the craft of comedy, because, you know, when you're not on the road, well, you want to be home. You want to be with the wife, with the kids. And for a while, that's it. That's all I was engulfed in. And I recently realized, I was like, fuck, man. Like, you know, this is so easy for me now. It's easy for me to talk to this audience, to talk to my other husbands, to talk to my men that have fucked up, done some dumb shit, trying to become better fathers, etc. Like, it's easy for me to do that. And I said, on this go around and me developing this material, I said, I have to challenge myself to step out of my comfort zone. And as crazy as that may sound to my audience, it's like, you got to find new ways to become uncomfortable, because there's so much comfort and discomfort for us. And when you talk about ever, you know, evolving, that's the new space for evolve, in that new discomfort. You know, so you talking about your wife with the tumor, I'm quite sure that it presented, you know, just a different wavelength of thoughts for you, a different approach, right?
Yeah, it's there's certain things that are, you know, in stand-up, you might talk about certain things, but like, that's the fear, is also opening yourself up in talking about certain things in this crazy world. You're also, I mean, it's so strange. It's like, but that's also, I mean, that's seeking discomfort. You really captured it, right? And when people talk about like comedians losing their edge, it's like, you know, it's not like they lose their edge. It's like they lose the desire to kind of like get close to the fire.
Wow.
It's not about like whether you're eating in a fancy restaurant. I mean, this is kind of a tangent, but like Seinfeld said this to me, you know, he's like, you know, you have those five kids, you travel with them, and it's chaos. And he's like, I'm so jealous. And I'm like, what do you mean you're jealous? He goes, because it's difficult. Because that difficult is something that we can turn into something interesting or funny. Do you know what I mean? It's the easy life can't be turned into, I mean, obviously people probably can, but like, that, it's so strange, because like I was doing a spot last night, and I was at Gotham, and pretty young kids. I mean, when I say young, I'm talking about people in their 20s and their 30s and or early 30s, if that. And I was like, you know, I remember being that person and going, I don't want to hear about someone's wife and kids or husband and kids. And there is something, the point I'm getting to is there is that balance of uniqueness and also it being universal. Like, I could talk about my kids, I could make that funny, but I can do that in my when I'm touring. But like, if it's a bunch of strangers that are, you know, in all likelihood don't have kids, I'm not even gonna jump over that hurdle. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of like contradicting what we're saying about seeking discomfort, but like, there is the balance of embracing being uncomfortable and also knowing when you're wasting time. Does that make sense?
It does. And I like what you said about the fire. I like what you said about, you know, the comparison, right? Because, you know, that thing that thing that we're talking about, it's like, you know what it is, Jim? It's one of those self-check moments. And I don't know how many of these moments you've had, you know, in your comedy career, but as like when you win, you like it and it's a great feeling, right? You can get comfortable with that feeling, but then you got to kind of self-check yourself and start to really ask yourself, like, are these still wins?
Right.
Am I still approaching practice the same way that I was before I won my first one? Right. Like, is it still the same? In those self-check moments, or just to make sure that you're aware, am I aware? And the reason why I think you are, why I think I still am, is because there's still a want for the recreative. Right. We're still recreating. We're still trying to come back with new and new again. And, you know, like you said, when we first were talking in the beginning, you said there's no better feeling. It's euphoric. It's the development of the new. It's I love it. Like that's a thing that's important to know that you still have and to identify with, because without that thing, then what are you doing it for? Does it become like work at that point? Like, is it no longer fun?
Yeah.
And is it work? Like, I don't ever want to take a deep breath before I get on stage and go, here go this shit again.
Right. I mean, I might be tired, but it's not a matter of whether I want to do it or not.
Yes. Yes.
And it's really fascinating to consider the absence of an assignment, and also how in the course of our careers, the concept of what a comedian is supposed to do or can do has shifted dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
So like the whole notion of, you know, doing specials, it's not just about like, oh, Netflix is this ever-changing thing and HBO used to be like the Holy Grail. It's about the concept of doing numerous specials. It used to be, well, there was like Carlin and Pryor, and then like the other side of that is the Borscht Belt, when people would do their own, they would do material for a lifetime. But neither of those are true anymore.
Okay.
So in other words, it's like there are comedians that we know that are brilliant that have not embraced the self-assignment. And so therefore,
talk, Jim.
People that are, people that are definitely funnier than me, and they just don't sit there, and because they still kill, we all want to kill. And there's, you know, they don't want to like, well, you know, I, because it's like it used to be comedians would do stand up, become successful, then they would do a sitcom. And now it's to the point where if a comedian is doing a sitcom, they're not only are they losing money, they're also losing creative fulfillment in a way. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, and I'm somebody who loves acting, but it's also strange because, I mean, you're somebody who loves acting too. And this is kind of an interesting thing, is that like, I believe that most comedians could be great actors, but it's not in that mindset of them. You know, they're just like, well, what's that for? And it's like, you can do these incredible characters in your act. Why don't you want to embrace this character in this movie? And they're like, I didn't write the line. And you're like, that's just so insane to me. These really brilliant people. And, you know, like you look at, and then you'll look at some actors, like I look at Melissa McCarthy and I'm like, she would be an amazing stand-up comedian.
She would be.
An amazing
be a fucking phenomenon,
right? And so,
yes.
But it doesn't. It should be if you can do a killer hour of stand up, you should be able to. You're acting in that, but it's weird. But there is this strange perception. I don't know if you ever encounter it, where it's kind of people, and I appreciate it, but people are always shocked when I'm in a movie and I'm acting and I'm decent.
You're a good fucking actor, Jim.
No, but do you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah. you too.
Whoa, they hit you with this.
The guy who tells jokes.
Connect.
Somehow do this. It's like, they have like downhill skiers acting. You know what I mean? It's like, do you know what I mean? It really all comes down to like the passion for it. Because I don't know about you. I know you grew up in Philly, but like, I mean, I have three brothers, and in my family, I'm considered third funniest. And that's not to say that like they don't have drive. It's about the gumption or the audacity or the chutzpah to be like, I'm doing this. Because in my family, it was like, what?
Mm-hmm. Same.
Like it was the equivalent of announcing you're going to be an astronaut.
Same.
Like, don't do that.
Yeah, what are you talking about? What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Stop it. You're wasting your time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, don't embarrass us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So those are also the same people that were like, you know, when you got some success, I always knew you could do it.
Hey, let me tell you something. I saw it. Remember when we were in the kitchen? And you remember that time you told a joke and I said, this is what you could be. This may be something. I told you that first. And it's crazy that it did. Yeah, everybody wants a piece of the responsible pie.
Yeah.
This is Luxury.
Andy Olive.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
I love that what you're saying, dude. I just, you know, I do this because I love to listen. I love to talk. And you know, I just think that a comedian's perspective on life, career, you know, drama, ups, downs, it's so interesting to me. It's so fucking interesting. And when you go, you know, there's a lot of people that partake in this craft of comedy that don't tap into self, you know, to the best of their ability, right? A lot of people try to cheat the process, and I compare it to basketball. There's a legend, Kobe Bryant, rest in peace. It's one of the greatest of all time. There's a story of Kobe Bryant, and the story was how Kobe Bryant went to Chicago. They were playing the Bulls, and Kobe Bryant went to the gym early in the morning. And when he went to the gym, Kobe Bryant went there to get some shots up. But this was before the team shoot around, before the practice. It was just him by himself. And Jason Williams comes in the gym at the same time, and Kobe's getting shots up. And Jason Williams said he was coming to do his just regular 100 shots or 200 shots. And he was doing it. And he said Kobe was there before him, and he was finishing up. And it didn't seem like Kobe was finishing. He was like, what the fuck is he doing? Like, we got a game. We're about to play a game. Why the fuck is he doing this? So Jason said he tried to put up a couple more shots or whatever, and he finally finished, and Kobe was still there. And he later saw Kobe, and he was like, damn, man, like, what the fuck were you doing, like, at that workout? And Kobe said, once I saw you in there, I said, I'm not going to let you finish after me. I'm going to let you see that no matter how hard you think you work, I'm going to work harder. Wow. And Kobe Bryant stayed there just for the mind fuck of I'm in your city. I'm at your gym. And I came to get up shots. And I got more shots up than you. I stayed longer than you. Yeah. And that was before my practice. You're going to leave knowing that this is how fucking hard I work. And this is why I bust ass. So whether other players are more talented or not, they're not going to work as hard, right? And it's not to say that everybody can do that, because everybody can't. That's a talent within a talent to want to work hard, to want to apply yourself. And the comedians that do that, like I can go down a list of comics, you know, regardless of what people's personal opinions are about some life choices. We're talking about the craft. You, Chris Rock, Louis C.K., Dave Chappelle. You know, I can go Seinfeld, right? I'm just naming people that are in that top tier. Wanda Sykes, you know, people that just pride themselves on not just doing it, but doing it again. Yeah. Getting back in the gym. Aziz, getting back in the gym, figuring out ways to stay there. Like, that to me is some of the most intriguing shit in the world, because you're constantly competing against yourself.
Right.
You're not competing against anybody else. You're competing against you. We're not going to be better than who we were, but we can get smarter and we can still work just as hard. And that group that I named, and there's so many more, Bill Burr, I could throw him in there, and you know, more names will come out as I say it. But there's a group of individuals that have that thing that you're talking about. That's self-aware. Which is fucking gold. It's gold in this craft.
You know what I think the interesting thing is that I think that it's weird, because like you know, in the sports world, you wonder about this. You know, I don't know Kobe's backstory and I don't know Derek Jeter's backstory, but like, I do know that like, there is something about eating a certain amount of shit that you got to sit there and you got to be able to go, all right, I've had three bowls of shit. Where most people are like, I'm not eating any shit. I'm not going to eat any shit. And you're like, all right, I'll eat three bowls of shit. And it's always about food for me, right? But the reason I say that is because the amount, and when I say shit, I'm talking about the amount of humiliation, the amount of rejection. People don't see it. People don't see, like, there's this kind of like pretty story, or even if it's like a story of like, they struggled for 10 years. It's like, they didn't struggle for 10 years. They were humiliated. Mm. And people thought they were ill. You know what I mean? And the thing is that I almost feel, this is just my theory, that people have to eat some crow to get, like, that's part of the process of creating the drive. Because I've had friends in comedy that have been great at everything, and they're also great at stand-up. But like that fourth or fifth, you know, sitcom deal that didn't work out, or they didn't get this because of that or whatever, it takes a toll. Whereas somebody that, and look, I'm not pretending that I had a super difficult life, but I'm just saying that I ate some shit. And some of my friends that didn't eat shit, that didn't have like the amount of failure that would cripple some people, then they embrace failure later on, and they don't have the calluses. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Like, I love that you call it eating shit. I call it bumping your fucking head, right? The reason why I call it bumping your head, because when you bump your head, the first thing you do is what? You go, oh, man.
Yeah.
This has so much meaning. This right here, the forehead grab, the forehead rub.
Yeah.
So much that this can mean right here. It's discomfort. It's, I can't believe this shit. It's, oh, my God. So what am I going to do? You got to be kidding me. Like, it's so much, right, that comes with the head bump. And without a head bump, you don't know how to walk in that thing again correctly, right? Sometimes a head bump is important because now you duck before you go in places, because the last thing you want to do is bump your head because you remember what it fucking felt like. Those moments where I've bumped my head are some of the most valuable and some of the most important, because my assumption that I would be able to do things without putting the work in was high because I was on this ego horse. The assumption that people are always going to laugh no matter what, well, that was just one that I created on my own. I don't got to do shit. I'll be fucking fine. It's like, you know, you go through these phases where you fucking, you just turn into something else. And that's the crazy thing about that success in comedy. The ego that can become, or the ego that can attach itself to your success from laughter is a motherfucker. That ego from going out and handling a crowd all the time and getting them where you want, that ego is a motherfucker. And it doesn't, not a dick. You're not a dick. You're not an asshole. But it's the cockiness and you just being good at what you do. That ego is a motherfucker. And I'm so glad that things happened where I had to check that monster early.
Yeah.
I had to get that monster under control, Jim.
Yeah, no, it's like, it is, but, you know, I thought you were almost going to say, like, all these lessons that I'm talking about, it's like, I wish I learned them, but I'm still going to have to learn them. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm still going to go into a situation, think, got this, done this, and splat. Do you know what I mean? Like, and you know, it's like, how many times do I have to learn this? But I do think it's really interesting also, because that's the other thing is, I remember Ed Helms said this. It's like, there's no class you can take for the, you know, like you can take an acting class, you can take, but like, what about the class you should take when, you know, you get handled a situation that maybe you don't even deserve. And you know, like that older sibling that tells you, like, hold on, you know, just because you got that doesn't mean that you suddenly your shit has stopped smelling. Do you know what I mean? There's no class for that. Like that whole, and because also most of it's incomparable. It's, you know, your experience, my experience, Seinfeld, Chris Rock, it's, and every comedian that I'll see over the last three nights in New York comedy clubs, their experience is completely different. Absolutely. Do you know what I mean? It's like the whole notion that, and it's fascinating. So it's like, you want to give some advice, but it's also, some of it is, you know, it's easy to characterize it as self-destruction, but it is, it's not just laugh ears. It's like, it's like also not losing that dose of humility, because there, believe me, there's like, everyone forgets it. Like, we all forget we're going to die, and we all forget that we've done horrible things that we beg for forgiveness for. And then someone does something probably comparable, and we're like, don't forgive them. You know what I mean? Like, it is insane. All these lessons we learn in church or in synagogue, we don't remember them. We like to quote them, you know?
Who acts as a inspiration to Jim Gaffigan, right? I mean, you are a father of five, married man, very vocal. The industry of comedy knows how dedicated Jim Gaffigan is to his family. Where does that come from? You know, you said you are one of three brothers. Did you come up in a household, mom, dad, everybody close, family dinners, trips, etc.?
There was definitely some of that. I mean, some of it is, you know, I'm far from perfect. It's like, you know, the perception game, We're mm-hmm. in this perception game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some of it is like, look, I believe comedians do the comedy they're going to do, and then they get credit or criticism for it, right?
Okay.
And so the comedy I do, it's, and the reality that, you know, I am the father of five and all this, it's like, that is, understandably, it's created this perception, but it's not like I know what I'm doing.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it is just this, but I would say that, like, we are a product of our different cultures, and there is a family culture that you're raised in that is some there. But, like, the weird thing is, like when you talk about heroes, it's like, I don't think that there's one person. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, I do okay. think that, like, I do aspire to, like, you know, I do aspire, like, I feel like Seinfeld has navigated this business with removing the emotion that can get in the way.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, all the conversations I have with him, it never turns into gossip. It's always, he's a comedy nerd. You talk comedy, you talk this or that, you know, you want to laugh. But, like, so that single focused kind of, because intellectually we know that, you know, you hang around that bitchy friend, male or female, it might be funny, but, like, an hour later you're like, ugh, you feel like sick because you've kind of, like, embraced negativity.
You embraced the bullshit.
Yeah.
You took time to take the bullshit in, and that's not the move.
You know, there is, like, and I admire people that, because I think that in the entertainment industry, there's a constant battle of getting caught up in other people's expectations.
Okay.
I love stand-up. I love acting. I love doing indie movies where I can play a character that is complex, and it's, you know, it's a... you know, you're essentially constructing this character and this world with this director who's often the writer. There isn't this financial, you know, intimidating thing hanging overhead. It's like, it's really kind of creative. But, like, I do sometimes think, like, when I get bummed out is when I start getting caught up in other people's expectations. Oh, I should have that. It's not my idea that I should, oh, I should have this or that. It's never my idea. And they're not being malicious, but I get caught up in other people's, like when I was first starting in stand-up, people would be like, have you been on Letterman yet? Which was a goal of mine. And it was like, I wasn't even worried about it at the time, but because they said it, I got caught up in their expectation.
It became a thing. It became your thing. Because it was said, oh God, wait, is that the thing? If so, no, I haven't done it. Fuck, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I gotta do it.
Am I crazy? You know.
Well, that was me. That was me at one point in my career where, you know, I wanted what the other comics had. Right? And, you know, I wanted their moment. And of course, this is a young version of myself. You know, I'm 25, 26 at the time. And, you know, you see your peers, you know, they have a tour, or they're, you know, doing a television spot, a set, or they get booked to do a small part in the movie. And it was heavy, man, that should be me.
Yeah.
That should be me, right? And you get caught up into that thing, and you realize quickly, it's like, well, no, it shouldn't, right? Like that shouldn't be me. That should be them. That's their thing, that's their moment, and I'm figuring mine out. And as I figure mine out, I'll get to the space where I crack the code on what this figuring out has done, and what my hard work, what position has put me in for me to be rewarded from it. That's my side. That's my lane. And it shouldn't be about others. But I had to once again self-check. I had to check myself and make sure that I got out of that space of thinking, because that's a dark place. That's the place of forever unhappy if you're always looking at what the other person has. You're never focusing on what you have.
And it's also, because I also believe that in the comedy community, I think that people assume that there is, I don't know what they think. It's like, I don't know if it was true at one point, but the reality is that there is a fraternal or, you know, I guess that's a fraternal or like there's this communal spirit among comedians that I think people don't see or they don't want to embrace. Like the reality is that comedians really do embody that kind of like being friends and having respect for someone that does something different and you or has different opinions that people don't kind of, you know, like it's kind of what this society is losing, which is like comedians love different points of views. It doesn't matter if that comedian, and I'm not saying there aren't like squabbles, but I'm just saying that generally it doesn't matter even how funny someone is on stage or what they do on stage. There is an affinity or you know, like a shared experience that I assume that, you know, people in the military share. It's like, oh, I'm not comparing us to Marines, but like there is something of like these weirdos that pursue stand-up are, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of stand-up they do. There is like, yeah, you're a weirdo too. It is the island of misfit toys. You know, we're all kind of a little bit weird. And by the way, it's like
a lot of bit. I even thought a lot of bit. We're a lot of bit in there. There's a lot of bit weird in there.
And I love acting, but I'll tell you something. I love comedians a lot more than I love actors. And I like actors. But like comedians, you know, you work with someone for 2 days, the hierarchy kind of melts away. Do you know what I mean? Like there's just, it's, you know, like I'm not saying that you're going to tell Dave Chappelle what to do on something, but like you're going to know someone. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I think sometimes with acting, even in that call sheet, it's like, it's not intentional and it might be necessary for the business of it. But like, we're in a comedy club, there's no specials. You know, like you go into a comedy club waiting for your spot, you're sitting in the same seat that the open micer was sitting in 2 hours before.
Yeah, there's not even when the carpet's rolled out, you're still one of, right? And there's a fraternity feeling that I associate with us as comics. And you know, some grab onto it, some don't. But the energy that we get from one another when we do have the supporting side of like if it's all positive. And it's all about seeing the craft win, regardless of person. If you want the better for the craft, then when you're there and you have nothing but supporting your heart. You're there and you're like, oh, this is dope. There's a new comic or there's new comics. There's a new wave. The internet is now uplifting and promoting a new fucking energy into comedy, and there's a new way to get to success. Oh, that's dope. Everything comedy, you're applauding because you know it's for the better of the craft, because the craft is what you love. If you have that mindset, you have that positive outlook, then it's very hard to lose. It's hard to find a loss, because everything is for the better of good, because it's all going to help open up a door that will eventually be perfect for you. That's my outlook. That's forever been my outlook.
This is Luxury.
Andy Allo,
the hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and U.S. Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Who inspires Jim Gaffigan? What comedians make you go, fuck, you know what, I got to get in the think tank. I got to go back in the think tank, and I got to put that pen to the pad, and I got to write some shit.
Oh, you know, I mean, it's ever changing. You know, it's like, it depends what I've watched. You know what I mean? It's like, and some of it is being impressed, like Nate Bargatze's funny, you know, Shane Gillis is funny, you know, it's like, and by the way, it's like that showcase thing on Netflix where they give a comedian half an hour, and I'm sure that they're kind of like, what the fuck, I want, you know, a whole hour, but like, I'm more prone to watch those than a whole hour, but it's weird, you know, it's like, for me, it's you know, like, there's this guy, I wish I could find it. It's like, for me, there's just people that are doing things that are so different, but truly authentic to them, that it inspires me in a strange way. You know what I mean? It's like, look, I love this guy, Chris Fleming. He does, okay, like, he did something that is so funny. And then, like, I'll see, like, just clips of, like, different comedians. It's weird, because also, like, you know, here I am, this guy that's been around forever, and, you know, I sometimes think that America's desire for new sometimes makes us ignore things that are, like, sometimes we pick new over quality.
Okay.
But I'm the same way. It's like, for me, discovering certain people like Chris Fleming or, you know, who's this guy? This guy, Shay, and like the Simpson guy on the new Netflix thing. It's like, I knew Mark Norman. I knew, you know, these guys. It's like, it's exciting to see, like, these new voices.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? Even if it's like, oh, you know what? Like, in the first 3 minutes, like, you can sit there and go, this guy or this woman's going to be really good. Do you know what I mean? Like, I felt that way about Fortune. I'm like, she's going to be good. Like, there is something there that, like, that, you know, like, they know who they are. And they're mining their experience. And I think Fortune's a great example of someone who's bringing light when she could bring darkness. And I'm not saying that, like, there's a dark side to her. But, like, I also think that comedy has an aftertaste. And, you know, like, and by the way, that's not to say that, like, I mean, I love dark comedy. I love, like, a real dark joke. I mean, all comedians have this, like, the things that we laugh at off stage, the audience wouldn't understand. But, like, if you're bringing light when maybe your experience has been, you could be angry, it's like, that's pretty amazing.
I love this side of you, because people don't get to hear you talk like this, right? Like, I love that you're just a comics comic, man. You can hear it. Like, there's a real genuine passion for comedy. There's a genuine passion and level of support for your counterparts as well. I think it's important for to not just be said, but for it to be heard, right? And even when you're mentioning the comics that you're like, oh, here's who does for me, you didn't go to what people may expect. Like, that'll shock the comics that you probably said to hear, oh man, Jim Gaffigan is a fan, or he admired. Like, that's big. That's what the craft of comedy needs and what it's missing sometimes. Like, it's missing the vocal side of support from us to the up and coming, the generation, or those that have succeeded and that have been. Sometimes it's good just to know that people fucking see you and that they fucking appreciate you.
Yeah, I mean, also, it's like, I mean, I've known Tig for like 30 years. We both were in Ireland at this festival and we bombed together. And like, her last special was amazing. And, you know, like, I always love Brian Regan. And, you know, it's like, it's weird because there's a panic, right? You're like, I got to say them all. I got to say them all, because it's like, you don't want to have this moment in an hour where you're like, I can't believe I didn't say that name.
I love it. I fucking love it. Jim, dude, like, you're, I don't know, man. Like, this is, you're making my day. And, you know, I can't say that I've had a bad conversation on any of these podcasts. And the reason why is because they're real. They're not prepped. You know, they're conversations that go in whatever direction me and the person I'm talking to decide to take it in. And, dude, I just love how complex the minds of comedians are. And, you know, some of them go fucking dark, Jim. Some of them go dark. You find out, you know, there's a lot of hurt, depression, anxiety. There's a lot of feeling attached to this to this thing that we do. And, you know, you find some that are like, yo, fuck this. You know, I've been doing it for so long. And after a certain amount of time, it's just like, oh, I can't no more. I'm sick of it. I'm tired. Like, you got different levels on this elevator of emotion. So, you know, to hear you and just to hear your outlook and for my fans to hear it once again, I think it's extremely refreshing. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim's got a fucking Netflix special out right now. It's on Netflix. And I'm just going to go backwards for a second before we close out and go back to the number 9. You know, we sped past it. He said, this is my 9th special. You know, this is something that doesn't just happen, right? Like, you know, I think there's a group of us that are like kind of churning and putting these specials out. And, you know, people are past the 6, people are at 7, some people are at 8, you're at 9. Like, it's a thing, right? Where these catalogs are being created by so many, and these bodies of work. I was talking to my guy from Australia.
Jeffries?
Yes, Jim Jeffries. And, you know, Jim was talking about the amount of specials that he had and how many he's done.
Right. I mean,
so many. He's so many. He's in your ballpark. He's in your ballpark of specials. And it's like, when you start to hear this, man, you realize that we're part of a new generation of comedy, and that older generation, right? You're talking about one special from the greats, or maybe 2.
Yeah.
3 of you are lucky, and Carlin's number was absurd.
Yeah.
Right? And there's so many people today that just deserve the flowers of making people aware. Like, I got a lot of body of work out there. I've put a lot of shit out there. And for people to go and be able to identify with you through the progression of your career, I think it's an amazing thing. So I would say, guys, if you're not educated on Jim Gaffigan, please do yourself a favor. Do yourself a favor and go look at what this man has done in the space of comedy. It's special. It truly is special. And he is not just an amazing comic, but he's a guy that fucking gets it. He gets it. He gets it. And what we talked about during this podcast was getting it, the understanding of self and what to put in the self and how to get the best out of you, the work that goes into it. And we can do this shit forever. But we can't go on forever because, unfortunately, I only have a certain amount of time. But
no, you got your four other jobs.
I mean, after this, Jim, I'm actually building a fort in the front of my house. It's a side project I'm doing.
You got your also landscaping business. Can I bring up one thing just because it's like, this is such a comedy nerd nugget. It's like, I know that we're living in this day of Chappelle, and he is unbelievable.
Yes.
But like, I want everyone to really think about, and they're, you know, it's like, look, there's, as you said, it's like, there's so many names, but like, I think people forget that Chris Rock is like one of, like, talk about like timeless, like those specials work today. Like there is something about, I just feel like we're in this day where I like, because, you know, maybe it was the 90s or the 2000s where it was just like, not only was he the king, you know what I mean? And he's also somebody that loves to act too. But like it's like, and this is not taking anything. And Chappelle would say the same thing. Chris Rock was like, and he's still around doing it. But like, and I thought Tambourine was great, but like, I do feel like the genius of him is almost not getting its due. Does that make sense?
I think that it does. And I think it's very easy to hear the volume of, you know, shit that you don't expect to hear because it seems like everything else is turned up, right?
Yeah.
But for me, Chris Rock, I mean, I talk to him all the time, so I know what's going on with him. I mean, he's gearing up to go on another tour now. But he's never lost, Jim.
No, he's never lost. He hasn't lost.
Yeah. Right? And I think that's the easy way to put it for the listeners.
Yeah.
He's never lost. He's been in the finals a lot of times, and he's won a lot of championships. And, you know, it's the game of longevity. It's the game of jazz. It's the game of am I getting asses in seats? And that's the real determining, you know, factor to where you are and what you are, right? When regardless of conversation or verbiage, when you step on a stage, are there asses in seats?
Yeah.
And if they are, it's because those people have made a decision to ride with you. And on Chris's side, they ride with him, and
yeah,
they forever have and forever will. Like and you got to think Bigger and Blacker was how many years ago?
I mean, it's just, and it still holds up.
It still holds up. It's timeless.
It's I just think it's weird because like we're in this blur of this zeitgeist thing, but like there is, and he probably does, but I guess it's just, you know, like the comedy nerd in me is like, that is like a pinpoint mind that like, you know, that's one in the generation, that pinpoint mind. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm.
Mm. Mm. Mm.
I don't know if you want to be described as a pinpoint mind, but like, it's pretty amazing.
No, you what you said is dope as hell. Once again, it goes back to what I just said earlier. It's important for us to do this.
Yeah.
It's important for comics to see us support other comics, cheer and hero and champion other comics in their work, male or female, it doesn't matter. Once again, we're a fraternity, so I love it. I love the support. I love the understanding, and dude, I love just the opportunity to change the narrative of what is always presented to be negative, you know, in our circle. There's this thing of, you know, you got to be the funniest or the best. And that's not the case. You know, there's room for us all.
Yeah, it really is an abundant universe. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Comedy Gold Mines. And I don't have to tell you what we do on here because you know. We get inside the minds of amazing comedians. And oh my God, today, what an amazing mind this one was. Jim, I've known you for a long time. I've never had anything but good things to say about you because I've watched your talent from afar and you've been nothing but pleasant to me throughout my career, man. I want to thank you for doing me a favor and doing my podcast. It's exactly what I thought it would be, which is dope as fuck. Ladies and gentlemen, please show some love to a great mind, Jim Gaffigan.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.